So before we start tonight, I'm going to ask God to help me set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your truth. Help me to carry your message tonight. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, a little housekeeping. I want everybody to support Stu the next couple weeks and selected guest leaders, and he's got some good things planned, and I don't know when I'll be back. Several weeks if I survive. I'm having a knee replacement, so I'll be fine.
You're going to bring Donna.
I may write some more thoughts. I may do some things at home. I have numbers. If my wife's ready to throw me out, I've got people to call and can take me to their house. It's going to be a hell of a thing. Anyway, just joking around. Tonight we're looking at the solution on page 25. We've come this far in the book. This is our 11th time, I believe, through the big book on Sunday night. But I really couldn't keep count. A few things. You can say anything you want. People don't like the big book, don't like the way it's written. But if you look at pages 24 and 25 and you open your book, and you look on page 24, and you look at the paragraph in italics, and then you look at, we're only going to cover three paragraphs tonight, you realize that this was God-inspired. No human being could have sat down and written it and put it together like this. Somebody was helping. There were so many people involved in the big book. A lot of people talk about Bill writing the book. He had so much help. He had the Oxford Group literature. He had Reverend Shoemaker, who was his spiritual advisor and has written extensively on the topics covered in this book. And there are some books you can get. One's called Reverend Shoemaker in the Big Book, and you can get it on Amazon. I've read it. One's the James Club, which is about early AA and good stuff. Last week we spent a lot of time on page 24 and the preceding two pages. I'm going to read from the top of the page on 24 again. At a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, now everybody said there's an alcoholic. Is everybody an alcoholic here?
Yeah.
All right. If you don't think you are, if you're here, it's good chance. He passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. Now, what they're telling you is if you're a real alcoholic, you are in a state where no matter what you want to do, you cannot keep from drinking. Now that is a hopeless situation of mind and body. Now I said tonight I was recovered. What does recovered means? It means today I don't have a hopeless condition of mind and body. I'm not obsessing with getting a drink. I haven't thought of it till now. And so that's a great gift for alcoholics, but it's not the only gift we get. That gift helps us to surrender and work these steps so that we have a relationship with our Creator, so that we have emotional sobriety. And we change our personality. And we don't have to live in fear and angry and judgment. And we can be the person God created. What a gift. So, of course, everybody in the room sober tonight, great. But that, to me, is just the beginning. Sobriety may be enough for some people just being sober, but I'd hate to live with my alcoholism untreated. Now, why do I say that? Sober without alcohol is when you have alcoholism. When you drink, you're drunk, and you have the effect of alcohol. So I have to learn how to live sober without drinking, the need to drink. And I have to learn how to live sober so that I can have a power to live so that I don't have to be angry, fearful, shame, and guilty and harm other people. Now, if I don't have a relationship with my Creator and have taken the steps to have some emotional sobriety, what's the point of it all? Might as well drink if you're going to be miserable. And the other thing is, how long can you go before you do drink? And so just a little background. It says the fact, now they use fact here, and then they're going to use facts twice on the page 25. The fact is, it's a fact, that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, we don't care why, have lost the power of choice in drink. Power of choice. That means no power to choose. That means no power over alcohol, you see? Our so-called willpower, anybody have willpower? Alcoholics have plenty of willpower. Don't think we don't. We are probably the most willful people that were ever created. But we have, our willpower won't work, is practically non-existent. Now why, if I decide that I'm not going to drink at 10 o'clock, why do I drink at 5? Because my mind tells me that I need a drink. And my mind says, you're only thinking of what it's going to do for you, not to you. Now, most people feel better on the way to the liquor store. They already feel the relief. It's coming. Addicts feel good when they got the pills in their pocket. They know it's coming. They know the relief is coming. Relief from what? Living sober. And so I can only see what alcohol is going to do for me, not to me, before I take the first drink, and I have no defense. Now, I've learned a lot in AA and over the years. And now, if I was to drink, I would go to the liquor store and I would say, you know, I'm selfish and self-centered. I'm full of fear. I'm angry. I've hurt a lot of people. I have shame and guilt. Get me a bottle. Now, I didn't know that before I came in here. That's why we drank. So we have to treat our spiritual condition so that our emotions don't build up to the level that we have to drink. Now, there's only one power that can give me the ability to say bad idea, Michael, about a drink, and that's God. No other power will work. I've heard people say, I'm going to make the group my higher power. You're going to give self-centered alcoholics control of your life. Now, I know what they're saying, because Bill W. says that, the 12 and 12 make the group. What they're saying in the beginning, and it is correct, it's true for me, you meet people who help you, they hold your hand, they carry you forward. But it's forward to the relationship with God. Yeah. Get it? And so you want to have a sponsor, but you don't want your sponsor to be your higher power. And sponsors have to remember not to be the higher power for their sponsees. Yeah. Something I have to be reminded of by my wife a lot. So anyway, we mean well, but you understand what I'm saying. It says, I'm unable at certain times. Here's the bad part. They should have left this out. At certain times, because alcoholics sitting here say, I know the certain times. That's triggers. I'm going to watch for my anger, fear, self-centeredness. I'm going to watch for my shame and guilt, right? And I'm going to treat that and say, I'm not going to drink. Well, that's impossible. Because where does the disease center? In your mind. You can't think your way out of this. Self-knowledge won't work. So at certain times, to bring it to my consciousness, that means what I'm aware of was sufficient for the memory of suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago, and I'd say hours. And into my consciousness, my awareness. So my consciousness has to have something that brings it into my conscious so that I can see I don't want to drink. I don't have to drink. I have a power not to drink. That's God. We want to have God consciousness. Awareness of God. God will then say, bad idea, Michael. And at certain times, you never know when they're going to be. How do you know when the certain times were? You never know. And for everybody sitting in this room, I don't know when the certain time is. So I better seek the power that gives me the power of choice. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It says, I am without defense against the first drink forever. Now, here's the problem with this book. People read it, and it says, we are without defense against the first drink, and they shake their head. Yeah, that's true. It's true for him. It's true for him. But you have to know it's true for you. And if you don't have a defense against the first drink, you better find one. So why do you think the next page says there's a solution? You get the hint? Now, to go to page 43, because I want to tie this together. And You get to the end, you get from Doctor's Opinion to page 43 in the big book. The next chapter is called We Agnostics. It's about God and how we need God and how we have to change our ideas about God and what's blocking us from God. And at the bottom of page 43, it summarizes everything up to this point, step one. It says the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Notice effective mental defense. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. I can't keep my sponsees from drinking. I can't keep myself from drinking. My defense must come from God. I have to remember that all the time. I have to seek God all the time. Whenever I think I've got this thing, I'm in trouble, right? Mm-hmm. So it says at the bottom, it says that line, we are led into pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. That is not good, by the way. Now, it's a gift to have incomprehensible and pitiful demoralization. It's a gift to be able to see that. Now, it says we are like men who've lost their legs. Oh, it says we are men who've lost their legs. We never grow new one. There's no treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. There's no pill that's going to help you control your drinking. There's no pill that's going to treat your mind, your alcoholic mind. And it's, oh, where am I? I'm on the wrong page. Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God, I need to have that surgery. Too many drugs. Oh, here, 24. Stop it. It says, when this sort of thinking is established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, that you don't know why you're drinking, you have no defense, it says you're beyond human aid. Notice the word. Human aid. No human aid. Group won't help it. Therapy won't help it. No human aid. These stark and ugly facts have been confirmed by legions of alcoholics throughout history, but for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. So many want to stop but cannot. So when I get the grace of God, I have the ability to see the truth about my situation, which they're going to talk about in the next paragraph, because they're going to describe what happens when you get the grace of God. And then the solution is to experience the power that gives you grace. Now think about that. The spiritual experience is for me to experience, have a relationship with the power that gave me the grace to see that I'm beyond help on my own. And then it says, there is a solution. It doesn't say, we have a solution. There is a solution. AA has one solution. Now, there are other solutions, I'm sure. If you have a solution, you want to write a book on it, great. If you don't have a solution, and you've been unable to stop drinking, and you can't live sober without taking the first drink, AA has a solution for you. Why do people do the steps? They're completely defeated, and they have no other way. Why do people do steps 1, 2, 3 and drink? They're not completely defeated. Why do people balk at step 4? Two reasons. One, they don't understand how simple it is. And 4, they're just not defeated. Step 0, and I wrote a thought on it, and it was brilliant. I'm joking, of course. But it's on the thoughts on the site, experiencethebigbook.org. Step 0, I heard this guy say, is the time for when you have the grace of God to where you've worked the steps and have a relationship with God. Now, how long can you be on step 0 and not drink? And that made a lot of sense to me, because I've been doing this a long time, and I've seen a lot of people on step 0. And step 0 is not good. I just want to tell you. It's worse than half measures. It says there is a solution. Now, here's Norm's here. He's my buddy. He loves this. Almost none of us, which means none of us, liked. Notice the word liked. I saw this tonight. Well, I don't care what you like. We're not here to make you happy. It's what you need. We don't care if you like this. We don't even ask you. We just tell you, if you want to do this, this is what we did, and this is the result. Now, so none of us liked it, but it's not what we like, it's what we need. And what do we need? The search myself. Leveling of my, and self-searching of what? My mind, my thinking. I have to level my pride. Notice the word level. Because my pride was so out of control. I had an inferiority complex and low self-esteem and excessive pride. Think about that. They say we're an egomaniac with a inferiority complex. Yeah, leveling of my pride. Now, Dr. Bob in his story says there's only one thing that'll block you from recovery, intellectual pride. That's our pride in ourselves, our pride in our reason, our inability to submit ourselves. And the confession of shortcomings is my character defects, confess it, which the process, notice the word, requires. So if you want to get from step zero to the relationship with God, you have to search yourself. That's step 4 and 5, leveling of pride, confession of shortcomings, 6 and 7, and then 8 and 9 is where we forgive and we're willing to make amends, and our pride is broken because we can see how we harm these people. It's required for its successful consummation. If you just do a little self-searching and you think you've leveled your pride a little bit and you confess your shortcomings in your mind to yourself, you're screwed. You get it? It has to be complete. And remember, Bill said it's simple but not easy in his story. A price has to be paid. Remember, you get a bill. It says your life's screwed up. You've completely effed it up. Fire yourself. God sends it to you. P.S. You need to destroy your self-centeredness. And it's not easy, but the process of destroying it is to search yourself, level your pride, confess your shortcomings. But here's the deal. We saw that it really worked in others. That's why Greg and Russ came here, and they see it working in people here. And they put an end in here, and I don't know if the end was good. We could say we saw it really worked in others, period. We had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I had been living it. Now notice the word come to believe. Now some people say hitting bottom. What does hitting bottom mean? It says you come to believe, you come to see the hopelessness and futility of life as you'd been living it. Well, one of the things that's hopeless and futile is you can't stop drinking. And then if you stop drinking, your life's completely unmanageable. And you can't stand the way the world is. Nobody's treating you right. Nobody listens. Things aren't going your way. It's not fair. Don't they understand my motives, how wonderful I am, even though I'm acting like a total a-hole? And it says, we had been living it. So I had been living a hopeless and futility of life for a long time before I believed it. Now, we read tonight, those people cannot and will not do this. There's only one class, those who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Now, I've read that for a long time. I went to meetings where we discussed it, and I'm sure I said something brilliant at the time. That was years ago. I had no idea what I was saying. But here's the deal. If you can't see the hopelessness and futility of your life, you're not constitutionally capable of being honest with yourselves. And we get that. It's a gift from God. It's a grace that we can see our hopeless condition. And it says we only have two choices in AA. We can have an alcoholic death, that's one door, or we can have a spiritual life. And it says on page 30 that these are not easy alternatives to face. Well, how can that be? I mean, alcoholic death or spiritual life, is that real complicated? Well, what they mean is that the alcoholic can't see that there are only two doors. He can't face that there are only two doors. He can't see the hopelessness and futility of his life as he's living it. And then we get a gift. Everybody who came here got a gift. Something brought you to AA that you could see that things were not going right and you needed help. So if you come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as you've been living it, then if you're approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, now those are the people who wrote the book. They said, we had a hopeless condition of mind and body. That's in the foreword. We're 100 men and women who have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. Does that get your attention? So what's the next line? It's pretty powerful. Should be read at every meeting. It says we have to show other alcoholics precisely how we recovered is the main purpose of the book. That's what they wrote. They wrote, if you have a hopeless condition of mind and body, if you have a futile life and hopeless situation, they showed you how they recovered. Now, therefore, if you're approached by these people who wrote the book, do you only have a choice to either do nothing or pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at your feet? So everybody has a choice when they come here. Do you want to go on the way you are, or do you want to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools? Now, I can't tell you. I see people. I sit with them. Their lives are completely hopeless and futile. But they can't see it. They still are telling, explaining things to me, and sometimes they cry a lot. But then it's all, they can't see that they're hopeless and futile, and they have to pick up a kit of spiritual tools. And until you can see that, you're not going to do the work. You're going to be at step zero. And 1, 2, and 3 can be a lot of lip service, but it doesn't change anything. It's just a decision. You got to take the action to change. And the action to change is steps 4 through 9, and that's the simple kit of spiritual tools. Now, I noticed when I read this, it says, come to believe and then pick up. So if you come to believe here, then you'll pick up the kit of spiritual tools. That's really what we're supposed to help people see. To come here, that's why I do this meeting on the book, pick up the kit of spiritual tools in this book. Now, this is page 25, right? If you go from 25 to 88, and you've plugged the spiritual tools in, you have a relationship with God. Now, how many pages is that? Can anybody hold this up? You would think, new people, that holding this up was like picking up a truck. This is just impossible. Oh, look what they're asking me to do. You could actually read all these pages in one night, really. I hope you get the point. It says, and the other thing about the simple kit of spiritual tools is when you pick them up, they have to be plugged in. They have to be plugged into the God socket. Now, a lot of people pick up the kit of spiritual tools and plug it into the Michael socket. That doesn't work. It has to be in the God socket. God, our relationship with God and receiving the kit of spiritual tools is like putting a mailbox out. And if you put a mailbox out, God will deliver the mail. But if you don't put the mailbox out, you're not going to get the mail. And we said, God can and would if he saw it, right? So you have to put your mailbox out. That's by using the kit of spiritual tools. You build a mailbox, God will deliver the mail. Now, if you don't get the mail, then you're rarely a person who failed to go down the path, you see? And so it all ties together. Now, it says, we have found much of heaven and have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Now, notice the word rocketed. This is not for people who say, you know, things are bad, I'll try AA for a while. This is not people go in the water and they put a toe in, and then they put two toes and they kind of dance around. This is for people who say, listen, I got to go right in, and they dive right in. Rocket it. Now, it says in the book, after you say the third step prayer, it says you're going to launch on a course of vigorous action. Anybody understand what those words mean? It's not very subtle, is it? Launched on a course of vigorous action. And if you do that, you're going to be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. Now, when do you do the fourth step after step 3, after you say the prayer?
Next
and at once. Anytime between next and at once. Get the picture? So people who are screwing around on step 3 for months, I don't know what that's all about. Because you're just living with untreated alcoholism. I see sponsors telling people, well, you know, we can't go too fast. How long can you live without taking the action? Your experience should tell you step 1. You can come to believe that you're insane and you can't have no power for alcohol pretty quickly because you've lived it. And then you can decide either to have God be your director or not. It's not that complicated. So what's the fourth dimension of existence? He's going to tell you in the next paragraph. I saw that tonight. I've read this, what, 1,000 times. But the fourth dimension of existence is the world of the spirit. It says that on page 84. After you've done steps 1 through 9 and you've received the promises. Anybody remember the promises? They're read at every meeting. Well, those are the 9th step promises. I don't know why they don't read the 1st step promises, the 3rd step promises, the 4th step, 5th. They're promises for every step. The 9th step promises are good because at that point you're amazed that God can do for you what you cannot do for yourself, and you have a relationship with God. It says, now we have entered the world of the spirit. This is the 4th dimension of existence. It's in a dimension where you're transformed and you're in the spiritual realm. Now, I wrote this card. I had this card which showed the world of my alcoholism. And then I had tests 1, 2, and 3 take me out of this world that I lived in. And I believed it was the real world, but it was all in here. It's all my self-centered, and I was full of fear, anger, self-pity, harmed a lot of people, made a lot of bad decisions. I couldn't stop drinking. I decided on 1, 2, and 3 that I didn't want to live in that world anymore. So I did steps 4 through 9, and we build the arch to freedom that they talk about. And I walked through that, and when you finish 4 through 9, you're in the world of the spirit, which is the real world. See, my only problem was that I lived in a world that didn't exist. It was in my mind. I separated my mind from God and the world, and I had Michael running the show. It wasn't pretty, let me tell you. And it won't be pretty today if I do that. And I said, I don't want to live there anymore. I want to live in the world of the Spirit with God. And then steps 10 and 11 is how you stay in that world. That's the whole program. And that's the 4th dimension of existence. And here it is, the great fact. You're new, you're old. In the book, there's two facts here. We read the bad fact. The fact on page 24 is you're screwed. You can't drink. Stop drinking. You have a hopeless condition of mind and body. Now on page 25, they're saying if you do this, what we said in the paragraph that we just went over, and you're in the 4th dimension of existence, the great fact is this, that I have had a deep and effective spiritual experience. Notice deep and effective. It has to be effective. And what is the spiritual experience? I have revolutionized my whole attitude towards life. I see life now as an opportunity of service to God and others. Toward our fellows, how I can help other people, and towards God's universe, the world. And we do that, we change our attitude towards life, our fellows, and God's universe. In step 1, 2, and 3, I change my attitude about God. He's going to be my director. In 4, 5, 6, and 7, I change my attitude about my mind. My mind's full of crap. And it's full of character defects. And I don't want to live that way and act on them anymore. And 8, 9 is how I get my life straight with the world, by making amends to people, and I lose my fear of people. So that's the great fact. This is what they had. If you want what they had, this is what you get. But you have to do the work to get this. Half measures avail us what?
Nothing.
Nothing. Now, this is the powerful line. The central fact of their lives, of the people who wrote this book, is the absolute certainty, not the certainty, the absolute certainty that their creator, your creator, has entered into your heart and life in a way which is indeed miraculous. Now, I know that's absolutely true. It's happened to me. It happens to me all the time. I have the surgery coming up. I put it in the God box. I say, it'll be okay. It'll be fine. God's in charge. It'll work out. I just have to follow him and do what I'm supposed to do and stay close to him, and he'll get me through it. But I know that God's there. The absolute certainty that your creator, now I wrote not the group, not sponsor, not AA in New York, but your creator has entered into your heart first. And then your life, because your heart has to be changed with God, and then your life follows. Now, in the 3rd step, you make a decision to give what? your will and your life over to the care of God. You've turned your mind and your actions over to the care of God. And the central fact of my life is that I know God has entered into my heart and my life in a way which is indeed miraculous. And what has happened? What is the miraculous thing that's happened? He tells you, he has commenced to accomplish those things for us which I could not do for myself. I don't have to drink today. Why? Because my Creator has entered into my heart and life in a way which is miraculous. If I don't have my Creator enter my heart and life in a way which is miraculous, I don't have any power not to drink. So you have a choice. Live the way you are, don't work the steps, don't listen to anything that the book says, and see what happens, see what enters into your heart and life. See if it's miraculous or not. And then you will commence to accomplish things for yourself which nobody wants to do. You get it? And then I wrote, how do I continue? It's not enough to begin this. I have to continue it. It's a lifetime process of allowing God to enter into my heart and mind. Now here's the thing, he's entered into my heart and mind in a way which is indeed miraculous. It's 6:45. Sorry, I talked too long tonight. But I'm not going to stop yet. But I can get in the parking lot and I can shut God out completely. I can start thinking and stewing about something and this and that. So steps 10 and 11 is how we allow God to work in our lives all the time. Yes. How we stay in relationship with him. If you're not enthusiastic about doing this after listening to me tonight, I can't say anymore. Why am I so enthusiastic about it? You should have seen me 18 years ago. It was a mess. I don't have to live that way anymore. It's a miracle. It's a miracle I'm sitting here tonight doing this. Now, here's the warning. They always give you some good news. And then they slam the door shut in your face and they give you the warning. This is the warning label. If you're seriously as alcoholic as we were, we believe there's no middle of the road solution. Now, a lot of alcoholics don't understand that. You know, it's confusing. No middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life had become impossible. And if I have passed into the region for which there is no return through human aid, I have but with two alternatives. Now, if you have a hopeless and futile life, if you can't quit drinking, if you can't keep from taking the first drink, if you can't live sober, then you're in a position where your life has become impossible and you've passed into a region where there's no return. You can't get back through human aid. There's no way to fix it. You can go to 90 meetings in 90 days. You can eat the big book. You can read it in Aramaic. You can recite the steps in Hebrew. Nothing will help because you're beyond human aid. So here's the two alternatives. There's no middle of the road. There are only two alternatives. One is to go on to the bitter end. You can go on the bitter end in alcoholic death. And we certainly let you do it. You know why? I can't keep you from doing it. Either you do this or not. I used to think that, you know, I need to nag him more, you know. Nag him more. Well, I got the wife husband improvement course that if I mention somebody 3 days and I'm frustrated, I have to fire them. Which actually makes sense. Because I can't nag them to do this. I can't do anything and confess they can constitutionally capable of seeing the truth. There's nothing I can do. And I was reading today, Dr. Bob and Bill W. went to AA number 3, and they told him that, are you done for good? And do you want this thing? And they said, now if you don't want it, we're going to go on to the next guy. They didn't beg him. They told him what they had, and if he was willing to have it, then they would help him. And so if you've passed through the point, and then they wrote this book to help me and you today, you see. This is the message. It says, one is to go to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of the intolerable situation. You would have to blot it out, right? You have to keep drinking through it as best we could in the other to accept spiritual help. It's not complicated. Now it says you have, if you're a real alcoholic, it says in doctor's opinion, I believe, that you have a disease that only a spiritual experience will conquer. And that's the whole book. If you have this disease, you need a relationship with God. It's the only hope for you. And the only way that they knew how to give it was to follow the directions that they put in this book. Now, you don't have to like the directions. You don't have to do them. It's their experience. They had something that worked. Now, I could tell you, for me, this does work. I've worked this. That's why I'm so enthusiastic about doing this meeting. I couldn't stop. If nobody showed up, I'd still do the meeting. How can we not? And I also wrote here, the ego can't exist in the fourth dimension. You're in unity with God. The character defects don't exist in the fourth dimension. And the fourth dimension is a very special place. It's the now. It's right now with God. And alcoholics don't like to live in the now. What does that mean? Alcoholics like to live in the future where they're afraid, or in the past where they're angry. So go home tonight and see where you are. You're sitting in your chair. Are you in the now or not? Are you worrying about tomorrow? You're angry about something that happened at 10 o'clock. And so what we learn in the steps is how to move the now and make it bigger. So it could be like hours where you just feel okay. And then the 10th and 11th step says, if you're in anger or fear, let go of it right away. Ask God to remove it. Get back in the now. And so I hope this was helpful. These two pages are just fantastic. When I come back, we're going to look at Roland Hazard and how we got the solution from Dr. Jung, the psychiatrist in Switzerland in 1933, and how the Oxford group had the steps and the program to get the solution. So I'm sorry I talked a little too long, but thank you for listening.
Thanks, Mike.